Fans, it's Monday night. It's 9 o'clock. It should be 10 o'clock, and I should be in bed. But we did this thing where we turned the clocks back yesterday. Anyway, welcome to the Cool Down Lap. This is the official podcast of Midwest Motorsports. I'm Greg Dreiss, your host, and we're continuing our weekly feature with James Johnson very shortly with the weekly Road Series Roundup. James is the voice of Midwest Motorsports. Doing commentating on a lot of our series, and glad to be a partner with them on Friday nights in the Truck Series. Before we get going, I want to let you know about something that's coming up this Saturday on the Sim Racing Podcast. This Saturday, November 11th at 10 a.m., Chris Mayo, the owner of BMRL eRacing Series, he'll be my guest, talking about something very special that they're doing on December 9th, 2023. It's a Toys for Tot race. It's going to be trucks at Las Vegas with all the proceeds going for Toys for Tots. So if you want some information on that, look up Chris Mayo, M-A-Y-O, on Facebook, or BMRL eRacing Series. Or you can tune in this Saturday morning, November 11th at 10 a.m. on the Sim Racing Podcast to find more about this great thing, Toys for Tots. And our driver spotlight this week, we are going to be chatting with Bryce Meddings from Down Under, who's just tearing up the Truck Series, scaring all the prior winners there, and giving them a run for their money. Let's see if he's on the channel right now. I know he's on, but he's muted. So we're just going to wait for him to jump on. There he is. Bryce, how you doing?
I'm good, Greg. How are you?
Good. You having breakfast or lunch down there right now? What time of day is it?
It's currently 1 p.m, and I'm holding out for lunch because I got a family function in the evening down here, so I haven't eaten much today, but I'll be filling my gut later on.
There you go. Well, definitely enjoy your family function down there. Thanks for fitting this into your, what probably is your normal lunch schedule down there. Last time I had somebody on from Australia, he insisted we do it at a certain time, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning my time, so it's great to have you on here. So you won another truck race, so tell me about that. Where did you qualify, and what was your strategy based on where you qualified?
Yeah, so Kentucky was the first win for the season. Hopefully there's going to be more, but we qualified on the pole. Kentucky, just before the practice I did there, I felt pretty hooked up. I sat down and I talked with my spotter throughout most of the week, and we discussed what I should do for each scenario. So if I didn't qualify on the pole, what was I going to do? If I did, what was I going to do? We got pole, so the strategy was just go run to the end of stage one as the leader, come down, put new rubber on, make whatever ground back up in the next stage, and then focus on obviously taking the lead back before the end of the race. And it all pretty much went to plan. There was one wreck happened. Mm-hmm. Fellow Australian Mark Cochran and I had a big moment of net code, so that put me to the back of the field, and I had to drive my way back up, but I managed to get it done in the end.
I've seen you on the broadcast a couple times when I'm commentating with James, and you seem to have a knack for just all of a sudden but near the end of the race, we're watching who's up front, and then you appear, and then there you are, and running away with it at the end. So definitely some good strategies there. So when you're in the back and you end up front, and definitely some saving going on, I'm sure. What's more important at Kentucky during that race? Was it saving fuel or tires?
Oh, for Kentucky, it was managing the tires, but also still going forward. So when I was working my way back up to the top of the field, I had to make sure I didn't destroy the tires, but I also needed to use them. Like, I was committed to using all sets of the tires that night after the wreck. There wasn't any way around having a spare set at the end.
Yep.
To get to the front, and just had to use them, had to push through. There was a few wrecks that helped me get a couple of positions a lot quicker. I got very lucky in one where I just kind of had to keep it pegged up top, and hopefully the car moved for me, and it did. So a lot of that was just using the tires as much as I could, pulling the trigger when I needed to. There's still a lot more work to go into being a bit more decisive when making moves, moving around a bit more on the track. I need to improve on, but that's all for the later development for the, through the rest of the season. So.
Got it. Did you find Kentucky to be a little tricky, or was it deceiving? Because I know when I race there, it doesn't look like it's a hard track, but coming out of turn two and turn four, especially turn two, it's a very late apex. So if you don't hit that apex correct or hit it too early, you're just going to slide up into the wall, and it's very easy to spin out in turn four as well. Did you find any situation like that, or what was your toughest part of that track for you?
So the toughest part for me was probably actually underdriving the exit of turn four. For me, the whole night I was just keeping it in. I was putting more tire wear on my right front by holding it down the track and not letting it ease up. But it was just a bit of a confidence thing. So I had a lot of issues with underdriving the night. One and two, I got nailed pretty quickly. It wasn't too hard for me to figure out. The line there, as you said, if you don't get into the groove on the exit of two, you wash up, there's no grip there, you lose all your time, and you're going towards the wall and you have to lift out of it. So one and two, they just understanding what your tires could do, if you could take it flat or if you couldn't, how much you needed to lift to make sure you got in that groove, and staying in that groove was really important, especially at the end of the race. Michael Simier, he was on my tail for a bit, and if I didn't actually stay in that groove, he probably would have had me a couple of times.
Yep.
So a few more things to work on, like staying in that groove. I know I touched the apron a little bit in my attempts to stay there, so that opened the door a little bit, but luckily I did hold on. So, a lot of it is underdriving at the moment. That's a lot of my tracks is I'm underdriving Auto Club. I was underdriving. Scott, my crew chief, was confident when we looked at the race on the Monday or Tuesday afterwards that I probably could have finished on the podium that race, if not tried to challenge for the win. So
there you go.
It was all underdriving, and that's kind of been a bit of a theme. So we're working on it, but yeah, it's not just track specific. It's just general across the board.
Yep, I carry some of the same faults at all tracks. Not necessarily maybe under driving, but whatever I do wrong at track one, I do wrong at track two and three and four. And I don't have a coach or a live spotter to help me with that. So maybe that's get my son to watch me sometimes when he's doing that. So with the turn two, if you don't hit that right and you're drifting up, how do you combat that if you can't get the lower position to get in turn one? Let's say there's somebody on your inside and you're on the outside. What's your strategy there to recover and then set yourself up for turn three and four?
Oh, it's not a hard and fast. You have to be in the grip. Obviously, you get a lot more grip down there, down low. If you're running isolated, then it's fine. When you're running side by side, if there's a car on your outside, you can't let the car drift up, so that inside line, the grip sort of goes away from it as the wheel tracks normally track up to the wall. So if someone hangs it around your outside and they manage to stay at least on your quarter, you can't fully exploit that. So if you're on the inside, you just kind of have to knuckle it down. The inside line is going to be preferable through three and four, especially in a later stage of a run. That's what I found, and that's what I was doing towards the end of the race, just locking down the inside line, just because it's going to be harder to pass someone on the outside with worn tires, especially when you're not in that groove. So
exactly. And what about pit entrance? Any issues there? Because I know that's one of the tracks that could be a little trickier to find pit road.
We didn't have a green flag stop, so pit entry was pretty standard. Nothing too out of the ordinary. If we had a green flag stop, we may have seen a couple of speeding. I know in practice I was speeding about three times out of 10 I was speeding onto pit lane. But given we didn't have a green flag stop, we didn't need to worry about it. So kind of lucky there. A lot of my issues in pit lane, which was evidenced when I was running at Phoenix in the event just going by, was I can stall my car quite easily, and I need to kind of fix that one before this weekend at Road America, because all the time you'll gain in the pit lane can be gone in a spin. So
this is true. And what are your plans for Road America? Have you run that track, and how does that track stack up against your performance at other tracks?
So I haven't actually done any driving of the truck at Road America. I have done a bit of driving of the truck at Road Atlanta. I did put in a few hours last week. I managed to work my way down to a 14.9 lap is in the truck channel for everyone who wants to go watch it. Pick up whatever you will, but yeah, that's that was me pushing all out. Probably not gonna try and run those times in the race. they're a bit hard on me mentally. So I'll actually have Scott here for the first time this season this weekend, so he'll be able to keep me focused and that, because normally he's out playing cricket on a Saturday, when the race is for us. So he'll be there, he'll be able to help me, walk me through, but probably just going to try and stick it towards the front, keep the racing clean and consistent. The goal this week with the IPL review coming in after Road America,
this is true,
is just to keep it as low as possible.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of laps. Any incidents we get are going to be much, much more severe towards our IPL.
Right.
I think Dustin's the only one who's beating me on that so far. He's been cleaner than me this season, so I just need to get that down. But really, anything in the top 10 is a bonus. Putting it on pole would be nice as well. But we're going in with just the expectation of, you know, clean finish, nothing too out there. So,
gotcha. So here you see you've got a crew chief and a spotter that you run with here in this league. And do they also assist you in other leagues or competitions that you're in? Tell me about other leagues you run in where you use your spotter and crew chief.
It's just Scott. Scott does my spotting and all the crew chief stuff. So he sits with me after the race. He does a bit of coaching. I've known Scott for a while. We've done a couple of leagues before, but normally Scott spots me and does the crew chief stuff for me on the races he can make, and I'll do it for him on other ones, and I'll learn from how he drives, and he'll teach me and coach me after each race. So he's done a lot to make me a much better driver than what I was coming into the start of last year and throughout the course of last year. And especially this season, he's been a real big help. So
with a spotter and crew chief, any aspirations to go up the ladder to some bigger money races?
Not at the moment. A lot of the current projected time in sim is all driver development, so getting me up to a speed where I can start to push on, like with the league. I know it's capped at a 2K I rating, so we can't do as many as officials as we would like. You're getting to 3K by the end of the season, which was like, I can't, Scott. Rating cap, I gotta stay under.
We
moved away from running the officials and into a lot more of just theory and just how to drive a car, and a lot of just practice. Like, we got a side drafting practice session booked in at for some point where we're just going to focus on getting comfortable racing near other cars and getting right up on their rear end so I can side draft effectively. So a lot more about development than going and racing in big money, but hopefully next year we can see that become a possibility.
Well, it definitely sounds like a deep love for racing with that much commitment you put into it. And now you're mentioning side drafting practice and such. So how long have you been on iRacing or any other sim racing?
I've only been on iRacing for about 2 years. Before that, I was racing on Assetto Corsa Competizione, and I did a lot of endurance racing. That's where primarily my background is in. So road racing, wasn't the fastest at it, but wasn't too bad. So we've won the Spa 24 since I joined. We won that last year. We came
Oh,
second at the
cool.
Daytona 24 this year. So still do have a love for the road racing. However, the oval stuff is starting to grab me and kind of take hold and lead me down a whole different path of racing, which I'm really, really keen to learn more about and develop into.
It's definitely a different animal. I love road racing. I'm not very good at it, but it's like you said, it's a whole nother, they're both the two separate worlds. Just something about on the road racing, I can't describe the feel of it being different. And I got a first taste of doing that a couple weeks ago. I work with a group over at Lime Rock Park and called the Right Handers. And if you're one of the top performers, however they judge that employee or worker or member of the year, you get to go on their autocross track for 4 hours. So, and I did it, and I did it in my Toyota Tacoma. Everybody was kind of laughing when I showed up in my truck, but we had one of their Skip Barber racing school cars, and they're standards. And I haven't driven standard in 20 years, so I'm like, I'm not going to embarrass myself and tie up the track, stalling out every 20 seconds. So I'm going to take my truck out on it, and it was 0.58 miles, turn after turn, and the G forces were incredible. So not really road racing, but it's the closest I've done, and that just cemented my love for it. So definitely, there's a something we have in common there with the road racing. So it's just a totally different animal than oval. Any experience with real road racing or go-karts or
I
anything
used to
like
do
that?
go-karting. I
Ah,
used to do
cool. Okay.
go-karts for a couple of years. I actually sold my kart to get my sim back when COVID hit. I was doing
Ah, okay.
karting on and off in the latter stages of the 2010s, and more so when I was younger, but nothing above karts for me. We never had the money to, so
Oh, that can be expensive. Talking to some guys up here that do, you can get your cheap car and just go to the local track and just do the weekly series or free time or whatever. But I was talking to some people that are spending $15,000 to $20,000 a year on the kart circuits just doing the Northeast. And so it's expensive. I mean, you can take a four cylinder and run it on a dirt track up here, three or four different dirt tracks for the summer, for like less than half of what a good go-kart costs. So it's a big difference. So and what else did I have here? I was thinking, oh, you mentioned your friend plays cricket. Do you play
Yes.
cricket?
No, I don't play cricket, but I do play Aussie rules football. Season's over
Ah.
for us because we play during the winter, and we're moving into summer down here. But no, I do play football. I won't be interrupted this season because of it, because we'll finish before the
Ah, gotcha.
AFL season starts. But yeah, it's a good way to keep in shape, and I enjoy it quite a bit.
I w watched it on TV on occasion, and to me, it looks like a cross between American football, soccer, and rugby. Is that a decent assessment of it?
Yeah, it's kind of the bastard love child, if you will, of a bunch of different sports. Like the games, you got to run so much. I think we run an average like 10, 13 Ks a match.
Oh, wow.
So you got to be fit. The field's like, I think, about four times the size of an American football pitch, or like three, I think. I can't remember, but it's massive. So everyone's running quite far, and you have to kick, and you have to keep your
Oh,
athleticism
yeah.
up. There's no pads either, and you can
Yes.
bump people, tackle people to the ground. So You gotta be physical to do it, and it was a real challenge for me when I started getting back into it because I hadn't played in so long. Like I only played like junior football when I was 8 beforehand, and then I got back into it 10 years later, and I got my ass whooped royally in my first few matches.
Yeah.
I was panting like a dog for a few weeks, but then I started to get my fitness back up. So it's a good way to balance out all the stationary time on the sim, but it means I can sit down and not have to worry about being, you know, having a lazy day and just doing a lot of driving over
there
a weekend.
You go. So is the Australian rules football, is that a circular field, or because it looks like that when I see it on TV, it looks like it's a big circle, or is it a big oval?
It depends on the ground. Okay. So some are more circular than they are oval, but the standard is an oval field.
Okay.
Like Sydney, they have a sort of more, like the Sydney cricket ground, it's more circular. Same with Optus Stadium in Perth, that they're more circular. But you've also got grounds like the ones that I'm playing on in local footy that are sort of squished on one side, so they're not perfectly even. So we don't have like a big standard one. Each ground's a little bit different, but typically they are oval.
Ah, okay. So
oblong.
So it's like American baseball. You go to a different stadium to play, and the field could be a different shape in the outfield and different lengths to the fence and stuff like that. Now, the scoring on football, there's 4 goalposts, and there's a wide section and then a narrow section. Can you explain when the ball goes through the wide section versus the narrow section, the difference in scoring and points and how that works?
Yeah, so the 2 center sticks, so if you kick the ball and it has to be kicked, it has to make contact below your knee, so you can shin the ball in or you can kick it in on the full, or it can take a bounce. As long as it goes between those 2 big sticks and it hasn't been touched by someone or it doesn't hit the post, then you get scored a goal, which is worth 6 points.
Ah, okay.
If you hit the post, then it's a point. If it touches someone before going through, that's a touch behind, which gives you, both of those give you 1 point. And if you miss to the left or the right between the shorter goalpost and the taller goalpost, that's worth a point. If it's touched going through there, then it's still just a point, I believe. But if you hit the outside point post on the full, then it's a kick in to the opposition team.
Because
they get to kick it in with no score penalty.
Well, thanks for explaining that, because I figured it was something along those lines, but I definitely can understand it a little more. Well, it definitely sounds like an exhilarating and fun game to play, and hats off to you guys that can do that, because I look at that and I'm like, no, I'm a skinny runt. I would get my butt kicked doing that. So congratulations on that. That's a feather in your hat cap if you can last a game, let alone a season, playing Australian rules football.
Yeah, it comes with the downsides. Like, I got injured last season, got concussed a couple of times. That's all kind of part and parcel with how the game's played at this point. So,
Do you laugh at American football players with their helmets and pads and such like that compared to you guys doing it with hardly any protection?
No, it's probably smarter, to be fair. Like, this is the safety that the helmet and pads give you.
That's true.
Means that you don't have to worry about getting injured. So if you have a knock to the head, then you're protected, right? Whereas we have a severe risk of concussion.
That's true.
It's way better. And I don't think it's a lesser sport because it has pads at all. I actually think it's probably the smarter thing to do. We should probably look at like the soft helmets. The only downside to the pads, if people tried to get them pushed into the effort, which I know they tried years ago, which was, it restricts your mobility.
Yes, it does.
that's just something that you can't do with how the game's played. It fundamentally changed how you play. So
yeah, that makes sense.
They can't have it, but there are like the ruckman in the center of the ground when they go out for the jump ball. They have shin guards in so they don't destroy their shins on each other.
Ah, okay.
But they're the only players who play with any sort of protection. A couple of players wear the soft helmets.
Yep.
I don't know if you've seen them in rugby.
Yeah.
Those kind of like soft padded helmets. Some people have those, but most of the time people just don't do it. Like I play with goggles because I'm blind. I'm pretty much blind without my glasses on.
Mm-hmm.
So I play with sport goggles on, and the amount of times I've had those like ripped off my head.
Oh, I can imagine.
In a tackle is obscene, but
yeah,
it's good fun, and I enjoy every second like fun. I'm out on the ground. So
yeah, well, they have their own issues with concussions in American football, to the point where they're thinking that the helmets that they have really aren't protecting that much. But then again, with those helmets, it gives you the false sense of security, and you know, the guys used to go at each other head first, but now they've kind of outlawed that because of the concussion issues. But it's definitely still an issue. So, and I definitely agree with, you know, too much pads in your game definitely would change the fundamentals of a game and probably take a lot of the fun out of it, I would think.
Yeah. And, like, you're right. The helmets will give you a false sense of security, and a helmet's not a concussion immunity device or
right.
what have you. It helps reduce the risk of a concussion, but if you're still throwing your head first into things, then you're still going to wind up with a chance of having a concussion. That goes with all contact sport.
Yeah.
I don't think there'll ever be a way to fully eliminate the risk of concussion from any contact sport, like even soccer, and that's a non-contact sport. You still have a risk of concussion. So in any sport, you're never going to get rid of the possibility. It's just about safety and mitigation of it.
Right. So keeping it as few as possible. You know what's going to happen, but we're going to delay when it happens and how many. So when you're running other series, do you still run trucks or do you run cars? And if so, which ones?
So I don't do a lot of racing in leagues outside the oval stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I did used to run in the V8 supercars for a little bit in an amateur series, but that was on a Tuesday night. Clashed with another race that I wanted to do, which was in the Xfinity car.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a Australian NASCAR league that I run in on Tuesday nights, Friday nights, and soon to be Sunday nights, where it's open setup in the trucks Xfinity and the cup car. So we get to play around with different setups on the car, see what does what.
Yeah. I don't.
And that's kind of the only other places I race. So.
Yeah, I don't touch the open setups. I can't figure them out. I adjust the camber on the car, and all of a sudden the gas cap pops off, and I'm like, I'm done with this stuff. So I can't figure all that stuff out. So I know it's a science, and some guys love doing it. Well, our guest right now has been Bryce Mettings. He won Truck Series at Kentucky, and he's looking forward to Road America coming up this weekend, which will be Friday night, 10 o'clock, and we will be live on Twitch at twitch.tv/Rivenvale. So, Bryce, thanks for stopping in and telling us a little about your racing history, and definitely thanks for filling me in on how the scoring is done in Australian rules football. It's doesn't pop up on American television that often, but when it does and I'm around, I sit down and watch it because I find it fascinating. So thanks for stopping by.
No, that's all good. Thank you for having me.
Bryce Mettings from Down Under, where it's 1 o'clock, and lucky them, heading into summer as we're heading into winter up here in the north. He's one of our top drivers in Midwest Motorsports Truck Series, and you can catch, like I said, again this weekend, Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time or thereabouts at Road America. And now I want to bring in James Johnson, and he's going to do his weekly Road Series weekly update. James, how you doing?
Hey, what a great interview with Bryce Mettings.
Oh, yeah, good guy.
Real superstar in the truck series, as you, when you call the racing with me, you know how well he's doing. And
yeah,
after three races leading the points already, it's great to hear more from Bryce and hear more about his native land down in Australia. So that was a great interview.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things that's so much fun about iRacing. When I was running the league and we were doing our admin meetings, my wife comes home from work and I say, hey, say hi to Al. He goes, oh, hi, Al. And then she picked up his accent and goes, where is he? He's over in Ireland. And she's like, really? I said, yeah, we're talking racing. It's like a long distance phone call, but you don't have to pay. So what's going on with what's happening in the world of road racing this week?
Yeah, the GT4s were added again at Lime Rock Park, your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Track. This was race 8 of 20, and Lime Rock, mile and a half, seven turns, you know it well, but for those that don't, they call it the bull ring of the road courses, and it did not disappoint in that aspect. There are a lot of little half spins and some guys taking aggressive curbs. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to see the Discord, or if you're a Midwest Motorsports racer. Some of the screenshots that Dustin Reinstedel pulled out really showed how much air they were catching over the jump or the yump or whatever it is as they go up the hill there, because we were on the classic circuit without the chicane. Mm-hmm. So it really was pretty exciting to see those GT4s get four, at least two, sometimes four wheels off after the fuel burned down. So it was pretty exciting there. I know you spend a lot of time at Lime Rock. Are you an official flagman or communications, or what do you do when you're up there at Lime Rock?
No, I work with a group that's called the Right Handers, and we do a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of customer service, running the information tent. We help out at the Winner's Circle, the media center. The car corrals, where if you drive a Porsche, Porsches get their own parking area. Maseratis get their own parking area. And we do quite a bit of stuff like that. A lot of shuttling drivers and teams back and forth. Like before the track opens, we take our golf carts and run across the track and pick them up on the outfield and then bring them to either the car corrals or the garages. And we make sure they get from the finish line to the winner's circle and media appointments after that. So that's my role there. There's guys that do flagging and stuff like that, but that's stationary. And I like doing the job with the right-handers because we get to float around the track for pretty much most of the day. And we also get to take in some racing as we're there.
Yeah, I'm sure that comes with extra privileges and, you know, it's just another part of the whole community that it takes to put on an event or run a track like that. But so it's good on you. I'm sure you got to see some good views of the uphill at Lime Rock. And like I say, if you saw the Twitch stream,
yep,
or replay, we got some really good replays. Colin, our camera guy on the broadcast team, has done a really good job of making sure that we get some good replays of that too. So Twitch.tv/Rivenvale Lime Rock. We had this last week off, so we'll get back to it. Right back, race 8 of 20. Max Bauer, who is no stranger to the front row, sat on pole. And although he took off and led flag to flag, it was not without some definite heat coming from behind. Johan de Roy, his quote-unquote teammate, qualified fourth. But on the very start, first lap, turn one, I'm sure you've seen some really good GT races, and turn one with the rolling start, chaos can often ensue.
Yep.
And that is no different for the Midwest Motorsports GT4 racers. Josh Bloom qualified second, so Max Bauer chose the outside to start on the outside. So Josh Bloom was on the inside going into turn one, and Jason Phillips qualified third, and so he was on the inside. And Jason Phillips just really went in a little bit deeper than Josh Bloom. And all credit to Jason Phillips. I'm sure they got at least a 4X, but Jason Phillips didn't completely run over him, but he did spin himself out on turn one, lap one. So he instantly drops all the way to the back. But again, full credit to him for not, you know, just running over and causing calamity, taking out Josh Bloom on lap one. So just keep that in mind for the future. We'll come back to Jason Phillips. But basically, the whole field went by before he could rejoin the track. And as Max Power and Johan de Roy now, who's in second, because Josh Bloom was still kind of in shock, kind of gathering his car back up after the contact, the rest of that lap, there it is, as I'm looking at my notes now, Josh Bloom actually had a penalty from Sebring. So he had to do a drive-through within the first couple of laps. I'm not exactly sure what the rule is. I didn't read that. I probably should have beforehand. But so Josh Bloom chose to do his drive-through penalty from contact responsibility from Sebring and did a drive-through on his very first lap. So now he's in the back with Jason Phillips. And boy, we kept an eye on them as Max Bauer and Johan de Roy were in front racing it out. Everybody else in the middle doing a really good job of racing clean and fair. A short lap time, you know, seven turns, 51 second laps.
Oh, that's so fast.
Within six or eight laps, the leaders are in traffic already.
Wow.
So between Aaron Holroyd, who guest broadcast with me on the Road Series, and I were really trying to watch timing and scoring closely to find where the battles are. Colin was doing a great job showing us all the different camera angles and battles too, going through the field. It was just a really exciting 60 minutes of racing. And so back to the strategy, Josh Bloom serves his penalty. He and Jason Phillips are coming through the field. And I could tell that Josh Bloom had really thought this race out, knowing that he had a penalty to serve going into it. At 20 minutes, Josh Bloom came in again and got tires and fuel. And I'm assuming that he thought that's all it was going to take to go ahead and get the pit stop out of the way and then just concentrate on the next 40 minutes, the 60-minute race. Most of the time, you can go at least 30, 35 minutes on a tank of fuel. So most everybody goes to at least the 30-minute mark and just splits it half and half on their tires. Josh Bloom thought better of it, thought it due to alternate strategy. And so Josh Bloom came through the field not once, but twice. So my driver of the day has got to be Josh Bloom after a bad start. No, not to take anything away from Max Bauer's total domination in his Aston Martin. It was a great interview afterwards. He gave a lot of credit to all the other racers for appreciating the blue flags. We saw guys pulling over. Christopher Hopper pulled over at least once, if not twice. It looks like he hit the brakes hard. Maybe needs to read up a little bit more on what blue flag means. Doesn't mean pull over and stop and adjust your shoes. It's, just let the next guy behind you go at the earliest convenience and try not to lose any spots. But so I felt kind of bad for Christopher Hopper for losing a couple spots for not knowing which one was the leader and which ones he was actually racing. But, you know, it's a learning experience. And Christopher Hopper and I have talked in the chat afterwards. And, you know, he's all good. He's having a great time learning as he goes and enjoying all the sim rig and all the camaraderie that goes on with the Midwest Motorsports. So the GT4 road racing is live and well. We are headed to Road Atlanta this weekend for a sprint. So we're going to have a qualifying for the sprint race. Then we'll have a 20-minute sprint race. The top 10 will invert, and that will set the grid for the 60-minute feature. So twitch.tv/Rivenvale, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. start time. We hope you'll join us. Johan de Roy currently leads the pro points and then the AM points. Justin Glickner is ahead of the points, only 48 points ahead of Sam Hubbard, who missed the last one. And also there are a couple of drop races too. So eight of 20, it's a little bit early to talk about points yet, but lots of action and lots of reason for everybody to show up. Almost a 30-car field at Lime Rock, and you're not going to want to miss Road Atlanta. 2.5-mile track, uphill, downhill, only one or two real passing zones. I expect to see a lot of off tracks, and hopefully there's an IPL review. Not hopefully there's an IPL review. I think the IPL review is coming up, so hopefully everybody can stay off of the IPL after the last couple of races. Yeah. That pretty much sums everything up for the Midwest Motorsports GT4 League.
Excellent. Where was everybody passing at Lime Rock? Because there's not a lot of places to pass there either.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Turn one was a huge passing point.
Yep.
I'll also say that the downhill, the very last turn, I think it's turn seven, there's a couple of times, I think it was Steve Hansel and Josh Bloom. Steve Hansel was in third, and Josh Bloom was still working, coming through the field. He caught back up to Steve Hansel, and they were going at it. I mean, it had to be for the last five laps. And I think just right in that last two or three laps, Bloom tried to carry a little more momentum. Steve must have lifted to keep from running drivers left out of seven. A little bit of contact. Steve spun around and lost two spots. It was definitely just incidental contact, no intent there. But turns, you know, that you really gather a lot of momentum on the uphill, and then you, depending on how much distance you have, if you can carry a little more speed, the next braking zone really is turn seven before yep. you go to the downhill. After turn four, all around the other end of the track at the uphill,
yep.
and the jump. So depending on how much space you have, you might catch them before turn six, and then you have to lift and you lose all your momentum or your the speed advantage. So you really have to time it just right to get it to where you exit turn seven without making contact and carrying your speed advantage that you carried from turn four on the previous lap, if you know what I'm saying, Greg. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Once you get your four wheels back on the ground,
Exactly. That's right. After catching there,
you can pretty much go hammer down full throttle all the way back to the start finish line, and to turn one. And going downhill into that last turn, it's full throttle all the way most of the time. So that's a big run right there.
It's hard to go too wide through those.
It's very hard.
Through five, six, or seven, it's hard to go too wide without somebody having to lift.
Yeah.
And if you don't trust the guy next to you, or if you're fighting for a position, you can't expect him to lift.
Exactly.
And give you room, you're going to run off, and you could risk losing more. So you have to time the exit of seven based off the distance you get
from
the speed advantage on turn four. So it's very, very challenging circuit.
It is.
It's simple on the outside, but when you're in a competition like that, especially when the drivers are so close, the cars are so equal, I don't know how iRacing did the balance of performance with all the different manufacturers, but they've got it right.
Well, especially,
nobody had a real advantage.
And especially
there was a lot of great racing.
Hard racing, especially when you got 30 cars on that course. When we're over there for IMSA, and that backstretch, it was called the no-name backstretch, but they renamed it last year during their historics weekend on Labor Day to it's now called the Paul Newman backstretch, because Paul Newman used to race there. When I'm there watching racing live, most of the passing is done in turn one and then through the S's before they get up to the backstretch. Those are the best places to pass right there, turns one, two, and three is what I've seen live. And then maybe coming around that final turn before you go back under the bridge down that steep hill is another place I've seen some passing done there. But tough course, small course, but it's fun. And when you said somebody was doing 51 seconds at Lime Rock on iRacing, that's a really good time. That is really good driving.
Yep. The purple lap for the day was Josh Bloom, 51.65, and in an hour, 60-minute race. And Josh Bloom, keep in mind, had a drive-through and a pit stop with fuel and tires. They still turned 68 laps.
Wow.
And the top six cars were on the lead lap.
That's pretty good. So what are you expecting out of Road Atlanta tomorrow night?
Yes, I truly don't know what to expect. I remember in the F3 race, Johan de Roy won the sprint and the feature. I expect Johan and Max to be up front. But listen, I don't want to discredit the AMs either. I had the pleasure of meeting Sam Hubbard at Road Atlanta for the Petit Le Mans. So we got to drinks and, you know, a little chit-chat.
Sure.
And, so I think that now that he's seen it in person, I also expect Shay McNeely to be a contender. He was not present at Lime Rock. He's going to use it as one of his drops. So Jason Phillips, I'm sure, is going to be fast. He ran a three-hour practice session today. So it can never count out Justin Thaler, Adrian Fedorowski. And then the AMs, you know, you truly don't know. You got to show up and find out. Twitch.tv/Rivenvale. Find out for yourself. You're going to, I think Aaron's helping me call it tomorrow, and I hope you get to join me Friday for the trucks, Greg.
Oh, I will. Yep, I'll definitely be there for trucks. I'm going to have to watch the replay on the road course tomorrow night because at 8 p.m. I've got the podcast for Rolling Thunder Racing Series, which is another league that I do a podcast for. So, yeah, Monday and Tuesday nights are busy nights around here, and then Friday in the booth with you. Saturday morning, I've got the original Joe Sixpack. Not Joe. It was originally Joe Sixpack, but a program for the original Sim Racing podcast, talking about a Toys for Tots fundraiser that a driver's doing. So we're going to do that on Saturday morning, and then Sunday evening, it's back in the Cup cars with Midwest, and then we'll, lo and behold, be back here on Monday night again already. Wow, time flies when you're having fun.
It sure does, Greg. Well, thanks again for
hosting
the cool down lap. We appreciate you, man.
It's a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity to do it for you guys. James Johnson with his weekly subgang, the weekly road series update. And you can catch Road Atlanta tomorrow live. 30 cars at Lime Rock. That's a lot of cars on that track. And tomorrow night will be at Road Atlanta. You can catch that live at twitch.tv/Rivenvale. They broadcast all our series. And then tune in this Friday night, just about a little before 10 p.m. Eastern time, for the Midwest Motorsports Truck Series. I'll be in the broadcast booth with James commentating on that and talking racing. Speaking of the Truck Series, let's take a look at the Truck Series for the last race, which we had Bryce Meddings on from Down Under. And when we started, it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon there and 9 p.m. up here. It's just so strange thinking that it's already tomorrow there and they're going into summer and we're headed into to winter up here. But that's iRacing. It's a family of racers all over the world. He was the winner at Kentucky, and he's a tough competition. And like we said earlier, James and I calling the truck race on Friday night, we're like, where's Bryce? And, you know, searching around, and there he is back in P15 with 15, 20 laps to go, and before you know it, he's up there in the top five. Congratulations, Bryce Meddings, for winning the Truck Series race at Kentucky. Take a look at the points in the Truck Series right now. Bryce Meddings is in P1. He's got 120 points. Right behind him is Ryan Latshaw with 116 points. In P3 is Brandon Morris. He's got 113 points. P4 is Eric Thaler with 111 points. In 5th is Sean Hapiak with 110. Pretty tight bunch from 1 to 5. Just only 10 points separating them there. P6, Mark Cochran with 104 points. And right behind him, Craig Hawkins in P7 with 103. Brandon Hinton with 100 points is in P8. Tie for 9th position with Justin Thaler and Brandon Thayer. at 96 points each, and Michael Simia in P10 with 94 points. Next race for the Truck Series is Road America this Friday night, November 10th, and that will be live on twitch.tv/Rivenvale. You can join myself and James in the booth and watch what should be another great truck race. It's time for the Xfinity Series review, and the winner of this past race was Brandon Morris. He won the Xfinity race. Taking a look at the standings for the Xfinity Series, Dustin Reinstedl is in first place with 128 points. Right behind him, Michael Simia with 127. Garrett Reed is in third position with 114 points. William Callis with 110 points is in fifth position. Christopher Melton has 108 points. He's in position number five. Jason Huffman in P6 with 107 points. Andrew Miller with 104 points is in P7. Eighth position is Clarence Prince. He's got 102 points, just one behind him. In ninth position is Drew Alvarez. And there's a tie for 10th position with John Bates and Tom Gulker, each with 99 points. And again, Xfinity will also be at Road America, and that will be on November 11th. Cup Series review. Dustin Reinstedl, he was the winner of this past race, and seen his name come up quite often on some of the top finishers. And points for the Cup Series. First place is Justin Thaler with 129 points. In second position, Christopher Melton with 127. Eric Thaler is in third position with 125. Again, a pretty tight race up top there. Fourth position, Peter Dillon with 116 with 108 points. In fifth position is Brandon Hinton. Dustin Reinstedl, who won at Kentucky in P6, is with 104 points. Norm Snyder in P7 has 102. Andy Kaster also has 102 points, and rounding out the top 10, Clarence Prince with 96 is tied with John Bates at 96 points. This Saturday, November 11th at 10 a.m., special edition of the Sim Racing Podcast, I'll be having Chris Mayo on from BMRLE Racing Series. You want to know what BMRL stands for? It's Bearded Motor Racing, Motorsports Racing League. And Chris sports great face of hair there, looking at him and talking with him online this week about a special event he's got coming up on Saturday, December 9th, 7 p.m. is practice time, 8 p.m. Central green flag. It's Trucks at Las Vegas. $10 entry fee. All proceeds go to Toys for Tots. And we'll be speaking to someone, I think, in about a week or two from Texas Motorsports League on another Toys for Tots fundraiser they've got coming up, and that gentleman's name is Justin. He's been on before. So Saturday morning, November 11th at 10 a.m., live right here on Twitch, the BMRL e-racing series. Chris Mayo, the owner, sponsoring a Toys for Tots race. You can look up BMRL e-racing series on Facebook or Chris Mayo, M-A-Y-O, on Facebook, or find out more information about the Toys for Tots Trucks at Las Vegas, and also that racing league this Saturday morning on the Sim Racing Podcast, November 11th, 10 a.m. This has been the Cool Down Lap. It's the official podcast of Midwest Motorsports. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m., you can tune in right here at twitch.tv/Greg Dreis for the Burn 'Em Down podcast. That's the podcast for the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. And that's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. They run Gen 4 cars, and it's another well-put-together league, just like Midwest Motorsports. And Midwest Motorsports podcast, the Cool Down Lap, and the Burn 'Em Down podcast is a production of the Sim Racing Podcast with your host, myself, Greg Dreis. And you can catch this and all the other podcasts on twitch.tv/Greg Dreis, and then shortly after we get off the air tonight, we go and load it right up to YouTube, and then we download the audio and send it over to Spotify, where you can catch us on Spotify, TuneIn, Anchor, who else? Google, Amazon Podcasts, all the major podcasts host platforms, and then early in 2024, rumor has it we'll also be on Sirius XM. Doesn't mean anything, it just sounds cool, because Sirius XM is picking up all the podcasts that used to be on Stitcher. They closed down the Stitcher division and folded it into Sirius XM. So join us Friday night, myself and James Johnson, for the Midwest Motorsports Truck Series. And tune in to twitch.tv/Rivenvale for all the broadcast series on Midwest Motorsports. And thanks for listening. I'm Greg Dreis, your host. Have yourselves a good night. Until then, stay in your lane, and we'll see you on the track. Good night.